Spark My Muse is the podcast for curious creative types, wine newbies, and those willing to put up with my occasional silliness. Thanks for sharing your time with me. This is the Spark My Muse podcast with me, your host, Lisa DeLay. By Narnia Retreats. Go to sparkmymuse.com, search for Narnia. To have a good wine tasting experience, you simply have to be aware with all your senses. In a way, it's like a spiritual practice, because anything that helps transform us, makes us into better human beings, and creates more awareness is spiritually formative. Where I work at Springgate Vineyard in the tasting room, there's at least one person per week or more who gets a taste of wine, and instead of enjoying it, instead of really appreciating it and looking at it and experiencing it, they will just sling it back and hardly taste it at all. So this is a real crash course on how to taste wine. You'll get a 1 ounce pour typically, and you want to look, use your sense of sight, look at the wine, try to understand what color it might be, what it reminds you of. You might even want to write it down as part of the exercise. You want to look to see if it has clarity, if the wine is clear, if it's been filtered well. And you want to look at how it moves down on the glass. It's called the viscosity. Whether it has a lot of alcohol in it, it will have more viscosity sometimes. You also want to take a good sniff. You want to stick your nose right into the glass and smell it. That's why the glasses are as wide as they are, so you can smell it. Then you want to stir it a little bit, kind of make the wine go in circles inside the glass, and this brings a little oxygen in to open the bouquet or release the aroma and flavors of the wine. It's important for it to have a little oxygen so that all the flavors can come to the surface. And then you want to take a small taste, just a sip, and keep it in your mouth and see what it tastes like. See if you can notice any fruit flavors and notes on that sip that you have. Grapes, when they're fermented, don't taste like grapes, except for a few varieties. They almost always taste like fruit and other things like vegetative things, grasses, herbs, and a whole host of other things. Wine is extremely complex, even more complex than blood serum. So it's important to really experience it and make sure you're getting everything out of it that you can. And then after you swallow that sip, you take a second sip just to keep it in your mouth for a short time and swallow it, noticing the aftertaste, if there is any, and noticing if it has a high acidity, if it has a high, what they call hotness, if it has a high alcohol content to it that means a little bit less residual sugar in the process. That is a very quick rundown of how to taste wine and appreciate it more. I'll go into more depth and detail in future episodes. And now for the Spark My Muse section. When I was in graduate school, I expected the term papers and the scholarly research and reading peer-reviewed articles. But one of the things I didn't expect to learn was unlearning things. One of those things that I learned about unlearning was to take a proper retreat. I go on a personal silent retreat 4 or 5 times a year. It's usually a half a day, and usually I take at least one other person along, sometimes a few. Sometimes I direct spiritual retreats, and in this way we all go alone together. We spend the day on our own, and we meet up for meals, and we debrief at the end of the day. if 90% of the time isn't spent alone, in my opinion, you really don't see the same benefits as you do in other forms of retreat. If staying alone discomforts you, you might need to ask yourself why that is. What thoughts are you afraid might come up? You can pray about those thoughts optimally when you're alone. So when I go on retreat, I leave early in the morning for a retreat center. It's called the Jesuit Center in Warnersville, Pennsylvania. And the Jesuits have a long tradition of valuing retreat and spiritual guidance. And thankfully for me, it's only about 45 minutes away. I'll stay until about 2 p.m. I eat lunch and reflect and leave around that time. Overnight would be nicer, and a weekend would be nicer than that. But if I don't at least take a half a day, 6 hours or so, it's sort of a wasted effort. It's kind of like thirst. Spiritual retreats sort of work like thirst. By the time you're thirsty, your kidneys have already sent an emergency signal to your brain, and your brain now tries desperately to regain the health for your body and urges you to drink. It's better, of course, if you provide for your body ahead of time, and the same is true for a thirsty soul. Don't let yourself get morbidly parched in a spiritual sense. It's just not healthy for you or anyone in your life. It's terrible for your art and harmful to your creative muse. So when you have your mission in the world and you realize that you're a person who's creative, you have to do well by others. You have to do right by others, and you have to do well and be well. Most of the time, you have to just remember to just be. So that's why a retreat is only a waste of time if good health is a waste of time. If the health of your body and your mind and your spirit and your soul is a waste of time, then so is retreating. But to me, it's very life-giving. A lot of us don't think of retreats in that sort of fashion. It was Lisa Welchel, actually, an outspoken Christian, a homeschooling mom, and an author who I know her as the preppy rich girl Blair from the 1980s sitcom show The Facts of Life. She said it like this: I'm hosting weekend retreats all over America. It's like a 24-hour slumber party for moms. We laugh, eat, play games, get massages, win prizes, and talk about parenting, and even cry a little bit. Well, I'm sorry, Lisa. That's more of a party. And it sounds fun, and it has its place, and the fellowship can be great. But it's not the same thing as rest and solitude for a thirsty soul. It's not a retreat, really, because there's not enough time to clear the chatter from your mind. And there's too many social obligations to contend with on those types of fellowship retreats. This idea of fellowshipping is more of a Western Protestant answer that misunderstands the question. In Catholic tradition, which is not my tradition, but something I can glean from in my spiritual walk, in that tradition, there's a long history of spiritual retreats and spiritual guides. And Protestants protested against a lot of the things that came with Catholicism, and it replaced it with being busy, a strong work ethic, the Protestant work ethic, as it's sometimes called. But God is often found best in stillness, when the boisterous yamming of our hearts and our minds are soothed by rest and actually unplugging in every way. The real question then is not how can I find a party so I can feel whole, but how do I find my whole way home? And home is within. You become quiet and you go inside. God is within. You won't find a God of Sabbath rest out there or at a place or in a group of giggling moms. But a restful place can happen if it gives you time and space to think and be and listen. That place will help you find your way home. You go within, not merely to escape the world and avoid, though that might happen for a time, but in order to come back fuller, richer, and ready to love and serve others. Solitude is healthy when it gives us a way back into community once again. So I leave you with these three important tips. If you want to go on a retreat, I strongly suggest you do. Number one is mark it on the calendar. Mark it as a vacation day. The British say it like this: you need to go on holiday. But holiday is a great way to think of it. Holy day. And holy means set apart, and that's exactly what a retreat should be. It should be a day set apart for something entirely different, so you can truly rest your soul. If you take off work to go to doctor's appointments, think of it in the same category as that. This is like a mental health day. Block off 4 to 6 hours at the very minimum. 8 or 10 is much better, and 24 to 48 hours is really where things begin to become very beneficial. And go away from home. Don't just lock yourself in your room and go to a separate part of the house. A retreat center or natural setting, a campground, a private room at a church or someone's home where no one will bother you is another great place to make sure a retreat can happen for you. Number 2 is do all you can to minimize distractions and obligations. Plan ahead. Tell people you will be off the grid. You will not be able to be contacted at all. Just leave your phone in your car. It won't kill you. If you think that it might kill you, or you think that you can't possibly be out of contact for 8 straight hours, or maybe you're too important, too busy to do this, then you have to be more serious about doing it in the first place. Delusion has set in at this point, and you've become blind. Your soul is weary even more than you realized. You're starting to die a slow soul death, so get out right away and make sure you get yourself some health and healing. Number 3 is let the chatter die out of your mind. This is one of the hardest things to do. Your mind is clamoring. If you're a person who has a lot to be responsible for, if you're a parent, if you're a manager, you have a lot clamoring in your mind. You're trying to remember different things, and you can't really get rest and peace until that chatter really subsides. That could take hours. What I do is I jot everything down really quickly that's chattering along in my mind, and I set it aside. I literally put it aside. And that takes practice. It's a discipline to actually unplug and become restful in your soul. I created a worksheet that's perfect for a retreat. It's called a daily sharpening ritual. It's supposed to be done daily, but it can be done during retreat times as well. This is a free resource. It's available at noisetrade.com, and you search daily sharpening ritual. This will help you organize your thoughts and create a greater awareness as you're alone with God and alone with your thoughts. Subscribe to the podcast and stop by the website sparkmymuse.com. Tell me, when was the last time you went on a retreat and what was the best part? Thanks so much for joining me today. Remember that caring for your soul is imperative for the well-being in your life. And that's just the facts of life.